You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Yore and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to the Family Feud podcast. I'm Keely Yore here with Shotgun Spratling. Whatever your name is, it's good to be back.
Wow, you don't even know my name? I've been gone that long?
I said it once correctly and the second time was just bad.
Yeah, because apparently I've been gone that long, you've forgotten who I am.
It's true. Who are you? I don't even know.
The man who is going to dominate this podcast.
I don't understand this. This is not a thing you dominate. This is not a game.
Everything is a competition.
Apparently so.
If you live your life like everything is a competition, you'll be much more competitive, obviously.
Yeah.
And you'll win the day. Because you know what happened across the town?
Uh-oh, nice segue.
Ooh, win the day.
Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly's in town.
Chip, hooray.
You know what that means right now?
What does it mean?
Nothing. Doesn't matter at all right now.
Right now?
Because you know what UCLA's doing?
Nothing.
Sitting at home doing nothing because they're not playing anymore.
I mean, they're bowl eligible.
Well, he's not going to be involved in it.
Okay, but they're not sitting at home doing nothing. They still have a bowl.
They are right now. They're going to start their bowl practices immediately. Come on.
My goodness. Anyway.
Anyways.
We missed you guys. We didn't see you last week. Some technical difficulties and Thanksgiving got in the way.
I don't think there was any technical difficulties. I was just too busy eating deep fried turkey for the first time. It's delicious.
Delicious. It is a technical difficulty when you forget to bring the podcasting equipment home.
Oh, yeah,
home
that
with
was
you.
On you.
That's
no technical difficulties on my side.
Whatever.
I was prepared and ready to go.
You were so not. Whatever. USC is now 10-2. They beat UCLA.
What a horrible season.
Jim Mora got fired.
Unfortunate for him. I like Jim Mora when he was in Atlanta with the Falcons.
Always
just throwing it out there.
There should be like Family Feud bingo. Georgia reference, a Shotgun Glory Days reference. Basically,
my glory days are current days.
Oh, yeah, I'm
when
sure.
I dominate you, that's a glory day. So every podcast is a glory day.
Oh, my goodness. USC remains undefeated in the Coliseum. So does Clay Helton. Yep. And the Trojans are going to face the Stanford Cardinal in the Pac-12 championship game.
Thanks to Washington. Washington dominated Washington State. And I was hoping for some good games. I mean, Clay Helton talked about it last night at the Trojans Live event that he was watching three games, actually. He was watching the Notre Dame-Stanford game on one TV. So he had another TV tuned in to the Apple Cup. And a third TV, interestingly, tuned in to Clemson, South Carolina. And why were you watching that game? Because his daughter is actually a nursing student at U of SC, University of Southern California. South Carolina.
Nice try. So he has the double SC connection, which is pretty ironic.
Whatever.
Yeah. I also had to mention that we have a soundboard today, so I might like test it out a little bit. Check this out. Hold on, ready?
Stanford Cardinal.
And they're facing
USC Trojans.
It's pretty cool.
Get excited.
You can't hear it, but it's pretty cool.
Get excited. I'm over here rolling my eyes at you.
Yeah, because you don't have your headphones in. Whatever. Shotgun's a slacker. Were you watching any of the games on Saturday? Stanford-Notre Dame?
I watched some of them there for Stanford-Notre Dame. I was flipping through each of them, actually.
I wish they were on separate times. I hated that they were at the same time because I would like to watch both of them at the same time. Except for at the end of UW-Wazoo, it was kind of pointless.
Well, normally I have multiple screens. I didn't have it set up for that. But, you know, I enjoyed watching. You know, it was fun having a Saturday off, getting to watch the games. Watch the Alabama-Auburn game. I watched mostly the Notre Dame and Stanford game. It seemed like somehow that the Notre Dame-Stanford game and the Apple Cup always seem to be going to commercial at the same time. So I'd flip over. I'm like, why that one? So I was tweeting actually about the Clemson South Carolina game. Somebody's like, oh, there's two other games that are going on way more important to USC. I'm like, for one, I don't care about USC. I'm watching games because it's my Saturday off. And for two, it just happened to always time up with their commercials. So it was a little frustrating not having the multiple screens at that time.
Yeah, you need all the screens like Clay Helton. But yeah, no, it was fun to be a football fan for once. And not, I feel that was the first Saturday we were not working. Or at least I was not working, throwing you under the bus, in like 20 weeks.
Because
something ridiculous.
Because I traveled to a couple games, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I put in more effort. # I dominate you.
Who was dominating, though, with all the recaps and everything during those games?
Yeah. Whatever. So this podcast is kind of interesting, considering we usually do Stock Up, Stock Down, Keep It, Change It, based on the game prior, but there's kind of been time between it, and we're closer to the Pac-12 championship game, so
that's more important at this point.
It definitely is. So we'll do
skim through it a little bit.
Yeah, a little. We won't have a 40-minute stock up, stock down like we did last time.
Well, we'll try not to argue as much.
We ramble. And the nice thing, though, is that it's a Wednesday that we're recording, so you don't have to rush off to the LA Times. We can be a little more chill, which is nice.
That's true.
Maybe.
But we want to get into it or what?
Let's get into it.
We just want to chit-chat the whole time.
No.
Talk some football? Let's talk some football.
Stock up.
I got turkey after having some deep-fried turkey, obviously.
I've never had deep-fried turkey.
It's really good. Ryan Abraham does it as well, but I was back home in Georgia. So I got turkey on the stock up. You were dissing turkey yesterday.
Ham on the stock up.
No, when you have turkey right, it's the best. I also have Isaiah Langley. I thought he played really well when he was in there. Malik Dorton stepping in for Rasheem Green. And then over on the basketball side, because, you know, I'm going to throw some basketball in, De'Anthony Melton. Because when his absence wasn't there, you could really tell against that Texas A&M team, the first top 20 matchup for USC this week.
Yeah, but stock down for USC basketball, maybe? I don't know. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah. My stock up, I had the bye week. Man, is it nice to have a break. I mean, I told you after the Colorado game, I was like, I don't want to talk about football for like 2 weeks. I was so burnt out. And I'm not playing. I'm not a full-time student anymore. I don't have the same burnout factor as the players. So I can only imagine what they felt like. So it made me realize how much the bye week is important and how much it like adds clarity. You know, I was ready to come back and talk about football after having some time to just like decompress. So bye weeks are important. So stock up for a bye week. I said USC's defensive senior/captains. I thought Chris Hawkins played a great game.
Dual senior sacks on back-to-back plays with Chris Hawkins and Uchenna Nwosu.
Yep, Uchenna Nwosu also had him. He did pretty well. And then I had Stephen Carr. We saw flashes of brilliance from him. I'm really excited just to see what he can do as a player-wise. Heldon said that he's fully healthy and we should see more of him on Friday against Stanford. Granted, he did say that leading up to UCLA, so I don't know if they're actually going to meet it this time. I'm really curious what the running back rotation is going to be like, but I'm stock up for Stephen Carr.
Yeah, I think you'll see more of him. He's played 7, 5, and 7 plays on offense the last three games that he's been back from his injury. Maybe he can get back to that 20 spot or, you know, 25, somewhere in there. You know, he was up to, I believe, 30, 31 against Texas before Ronald Jones was out for the Cal game. Then, of course, Stephen Carr got a ton of plays that game. But I think you'll see him involved more. And, you know, rewatching that Stanford game, it was really evident how much USC used all four of their backs.
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head the number of carries each of them got, but it just seemed like rewatching the 60-minute version, you're like, oh, well, there's Rojo, of course. Oh, there's some Stephen Carr, and he had some really big runs in that Stanford game. And then also you're like, oh, there's Vi, and there's Sed Ware as well, you know, using that two-back set. So, you know, they used all four guys, and, you know, all four guys were churning out some yards. You know, really put, they get a really good push up front in that offensive line. That'll be a key going forward in this game, is how they can, if they can do the same thing without Vionne Talamavayo this time.
Yeah, definitely. How much do you think, because I feel like the way USC used the running backs against Stanford the first time around seemed like a great strategy, and then they kind of strayed away from it. Is that just because maybe Ronald Jones needed his due, or the offensive line wasn't doing as much, so you stick with the guy who, you know, can do stuff? What happened there?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you had Ronald Jones get nicked up.
Yeah.
Two, then you had Stephen Carr get nicked up.
True.
You also had the emergence of the wide receivers. You know, they became more prevalent targets for Sam Darnold. You got Daniel Amorebebe back. So part of it is fact that you lost a couple bodies and those guys got nicked up. Part of it is you saw some other weapons emerge. But, you know, it seemed like after seeing that game, you're like, oh, USC can be physical up front. And then a couple weeks later, you're like, where did that go? Oh, Tua Lomanaz got staph infection. Oh, Vionne Talamavayo goes down.
And I think
just getting that consistency on the offensive line has been something they've struggled with. And I thought that they had kind of gotten that the last couple weeks until the UCLA game. You know, I thought they'd put up 300 yards easily. Instead, they were held, you know, give UCLA's front credit. You know, they held USC to, I think, 150, 170 yards on the ground when they've been getting up over 300 yards a game. So they actually moved above someone in the rankings in the last 2 weeks, because they also held Cal to, I think, 220 or something like that. So they are actually down to in the 280 range, I think, rather than becoming potentially the first Power 5 team in 15 years to give up over 300 yards rushing. You know, I was really looking forward to that just because it's a fun stat. But give credit to the UCLA front. They did a good job of shutting USC down in after the first quarter. The first quarter, USC really ran the ball well, but after that, not so much.
Yeah. That transitions into Stockdown. I actually had USC's O-line. I think we all expected more from the running game.
I had run game just
yeah, there. Yeah. I mean, I talked to Nico Fall about it, and he said they were definitely disappointed after that, just because everyone knew the stat that you just said about UCLA. And then even talking to Ronald Jones after the game, he just was not very pleased. He wasn't angry, but we'd ask him questions, and he kind of was like, So, and understandably so. I mean, people expected him to get a lot of yards, and he didn't even pass O.J. Simpson on the all-time rusher list, so... It's disappointing.
It was a little bit disappointing
USC.
Game for the run game, just because you thought that they would be able to do more things than they did. And part of it, you know, I would say give credit to UCLA. They came fired up. But USC, that was the big difference for them, you know, being able to convert on third down, it seemed like, because they were not able to, instead of 6 yards in the, you know, some of the carries they were getting in the first quarter, those became 3 yard gains. And then you have 2 3-yard gains, and you know, a 3 and a 2. It's 3rd and 5 versus 3rd and 1, and they struggled some on third down. So I thought that was the biggest difference going through the game, is that USC didn't convert as many third downs as they probably should have, and part of that was they didn't run the ball well in the first couple downs.
I also had the Coliseum as we know it for Stockdown. That was the last time that was going to be the Coliseum. I mean, as we know
point.
It, you know. So we'll see. A lot of changes coming.
Spaceship coming. Before too long. Spaceship is a press box / you know, yeah. Rich people hover hub.
Yeah,
hub.
I don't understand how that's gonna work.
Who knows? That's a Dan Weber. He is fully in on that. And you know, one of the interesting things I saw on the message board this week was, do you think USC fans can Tennessee the Coliseum redesign, as in just cause such an uproar that they change their mind?
I mean, they should.
I mean, that's what Dan's been trying to tell people to do for, I believe, what, 2 years now since this stuff was started, and apparently there's not been enough to cause the administration to change their mind. But, you know, it's going to be much different. You're going to take out a bunch of seats, some primetime seats too, so that's unfortunate for all the USC season ticket holders are going to be moved. That's, you know, that's just not a good idea in my opinion. But
yeah, I agree.
It's a little too late now in the schedule to change things now.
Do you think it's because it's not very clear about what they're doing? I feel like if you ask the average USC fan, they wouldn't really know, like, oh yeah, this exactly is what's going to happen. And because that's not very clear, people aren't necessarily angry about it yet, as opposed to when they see it.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, there's not a single visual thing that you can jump on and say, oh, this is what, you know, Shiano gets hired by Tennessee or about to be hired by Tennessee. That's one individual thing you can jump on real quick.
Yeah.
And then also you can really attack one certain thing, which was that he was at Penn State and he may or may not have known. I mean, one of the trustees came out and said, hey, didn't know anything. This wasn't an issue. And Tennessee fans, didn't matter. That's what the one thing they latched on. So there's not one thing in that Coliseum redesign necessarily that you can latch on. Maybe the missing seats, that's what I would have latched on. But
there
needed to be something visual for people to understand, like, this is how many seats are going to be gone now. This is a diagram that shows.
But that's my point. You're not going to broadcast that. Like, oh, we're losing this.
Someone should have, apparently.
Dan Weber was waving the
flag. He tried.
I also had Jack Jones on Stockdown.
I had him on Stockdown as well.
Do you think he's regressed?
I don't necessarily think it's that he's regressed. I just think that, you know, he's not making plays. And part of it, I mean, there are a couple times, the first deep ball that was called back, he's on Jordan Laszlo. That's just a perfect throw. I mean, it's 40-something yards down the field, and he's right on the guy's back. There's just not too much you can do about it. It's a great throw. The last one, the touchdown to Laszlo at the end, you know, he thought he had help over the top. You can see he immediately turned, and even on the broadcast, they're like, oh, the safety over here, Marvell Tell's got to go over the top or whatever it is. Whatever the call was, there was a miscommunication there. Those were the things at the beginning of last year that were killing USC, you know, those big plays of getting people behind, and that's what we've seen recently. There's been some times where, you know, he's been trying to do too much for Jack Jones individually, but also there's been some miscommunications over there, and I think that's been a problem. The interesting thing is now with Iman Marshall back, Iman Marshall played really well in that game, and Isaiah Langley played pretty well too, is how much time how do they play out the reps in that case? I mean, they basically were rotating the three guys. you know, they start off with two of them. The other guy rotates in for one, rotates in for the other. They go back, and they just did the whole the rotation the entire time, similar to how the wide receivers have done previously with Michael Pittman, Stephen Mitchell, and Tyler Vaughns. They did similar to that. But in the Pac-12 championship, do we see any difference there? Do we see any change? I think this week of practice will also determine that as well.
Ewan Marshall has historically been good against UCLA.
It's true. He likes playing against Josh Rosen.
He does. He does.
He's had a couple picks against Josh Rosen. He looked really good in that game. Had a couple breakups. Just looked like he was back. I don't know if he wasn't healthy before, but he just looked, you know, he's crisper. He was breaking a lot better. He was playing with a knee brace, and he just looked really good. I thought he looked really good in that game.
That's all I got for Stockdown.
Stockdown, I had Jack Jones, like you talked about, and needing the help over the top. That was, you know, just interesting to see. He immediately turned around looking for something. The run game, as we talked about, Jim Mora stocked down, you know, because he's out. Mm-hmm. But at least he's getting paid nice. Him and Todd Graham.
Yeah. Okay. I don't understand firing Todd Graham. Like, I understand, like, they're just, like, kind of sick of him and done with him. But you got to have a plan in place to do that.
Apparently Herm Edwards is the plan. I don't know.
You play, don't win the game.
Now, we'll be excited about that. He'll be a good quote if he is a part of the conference going forward. We'll see. I mean, that... It could be like Tennessee. There's been like seven different guys. And people are like, oh, okay, this might be the guy. Oh, wait, no, never mind.
No.
So until the ink and paper is signed.
The ink?
And then it's not even certain then. Because then you could have a Billy Donovan situation where he went back to Florida after. Or you could have a Rick Majerus at USC where he was signed and he was the head coach for, what, like 3 days or something? And he's like, oh, never mind. I'm backing out of this. My health or whatever it was. You know, so we'll see what they do there. Give props to UCLA. They had a target, they went out, and they got him. That's something we haven't seen. I mean, Mississippi State's like the only other school that, you know, has keyed on one person, made the decision to go after that person, and got him that nice and quickly. And, you know, UCLA was able to do the same thing, give them credit for that decision and be able to get their guy. Will that work out? We'll see. I'm not as high on Chip Kelly as everybody else. I think he can be really good, but... I think the college football game has caught up a little bit to his stuff, just because everyone's running it now, so defenses see it a little bit more.
So how much do you think everyone's like, oh, everyone, Helton's on the hot seat even more now because Chip's here?
I don't think he's on the hot seat, but I think I agree with people when it says that it will force USC to either step up their game or fall behind. And the number one person that is put on is, of course, Chip Kelly, I mean, is on Clay Helton to keep up with, you know, if UCLA has a 10-win season, USC's got to keep up with them as well. So you're not going to be able to fall behind, and it looks like they're heading in the right direction at least. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll start with the recruiting classes for him and then go from there. My last stock down was the school, USC, and this goes to the hoops because still not clearing De'Anthony Melton.
Yep.
No one understands why. The question... You know, Nathan Fennell for the LA Times has done a really nice job covering this story, and he talked to the lawyer, and the lawyer said that the school actually emailed the lawyer and said, you should probably send a waiver to the NCAA and tell them. It's like, what? Wait, why is USC not sending this waiver? Why does his lawyer need to send a waiver and get him cleared? Why are you not fighting for him? And it's basically the USC is not going to play him until he's cleared and they know that he's eligible and he's not going to cost him any games. But it doesn't seem like they're really fighting for him, and that's very disheartening.
Yeah, who pays for Melton's lawyer?
I would assume that he does, or
that's rough.
There's no telling there.
That's rough though. We have a listener question.
Listener question.
My homie Tom in Illinois. I don't actually know him, but he's my homie after this question. Can you please tell us why Shotgun hates stock neutral so much? Seems like a great thing.
Because you're supposed to pick a side. Is it up or is it down? Did the special teams do good or they do bad? We don't really know.
That's exactly. After the game, Shotgun was like, I don't really know where to put special teams, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know where?
Nope.
Stock neutral.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly what you put.
Because you can put every single thing in stock neutral.
There's some times where it's just clear. Like this game.
Nope.
You have the fake punt return, but then you have all the other stuff. Yes.
Nope.
Yes.
Not happening.
I have a soundboard, so I might boo you.
Get out of here with that.
Stock neutral.
Not happening.
Yeah, so happening. Okay, heard it on the sidelines.
So I was trying to, my computer basically broke the day before the game. Mm. So I had to use one of my girlfriend's computers, her work computer, and then also using your computer at the same time to get photos uploaded during halftime.
And let me just say that those are separate people. A lot of people like to combine the two. He has a girlfriend of 4 years. I am not single.
Wow, putting all my business out there.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Shotgun has someone else. That's not me. So everyone stop tweeting us. Okay, continue.
Whatever. So I use two computers, basically, and I'm trying to upload photos. It took a little bit longer during halftime. So I didn't see the initial kickoff, but boy, did I hear it when Reed Budrovich.
I missed it, too, because I was helping you with my computer. It was so awful. I felt so bad.
I heard Reed Budrovich's hit, and like I just assumed it was a big hit. Did not know. I heard everybody, you know, get loud in the stadium. And then when I went back and watched the replay, I was like, ooh, boy. Ooh, Darnay got lit up. Mm-hmm. Reed Budrovich coming across. He actually hurt himself later in the game, but that was not on that play. He actually got clotheslined, it looked like, from a UCLA player. No call there randomly from the referees, but
interesting.
Whatever.
Yeah, I ended up seeing Reed after the game on the field, and I was like, hey, that hit, it's going viral. And he was like, no way. I was like, yeah, look at this. Because like, I think Bleacher Report did it or something. Everyone caught on to it, but I had it like up while he was around it. I was like, look at this. And he was like, that's so cool. So yeah, shouts to Reed. For punters are people too.
That's true. I also have Malik Dorton. You know, I talked to KU after the game. KU's usually, all the coaches on USC staff are usually pretty quick to get out of the stadium after a game, not do interviews if they can help it. But I've caught up to KU a couple times, and I asked him about Malik Dorton in particular. Malik Dorton has a big hit on Josh Rosen, the strip sack, you know, knocking the ball loose, big play. And he actually, if you watch the replay, he just throws Scott Quesenberry, who's a first-team All-Pac-12 guy last year, who's their senior starter, their center. He just one-hand tosses him out of the way. See you, bye. Like a rag doll. Goes right to Rosen, hits him, causes the fumble. John Houston recovers it. Afterwards, KU, like, he couldn't take the grin off his face. It was fun to see him, you know, so excited for one of his players. And he said to see him have success, you smile a little bit brighter with a guy like that, especially when he didn't come in with an easy path. He's worked his butt off. And Malik Dorn's was an outside linebacker initially. He's an undersized guy. He had a bulk up to move into the defense line. And he's played some nose tackle recently for USC. So to see a guy that's been versatile and kind of did whatever the coaches have asked, and he's really improved under KU, is really fun. And it's fun to see a coach be excited about his player like that. It was a fun little moment after the game for me.
Yeah, two thoughts. One, Malik Dorton is going to be an asset for USC come next year when you lose guys like Fatu and maybe Rasheem Green, and you lose Uchenna Nwosu. And then, because he has an extra year of eligibility, and he's done a good job of maturing over the season. Second thought, do you think KU is underrated? USC is now officially tied for first in sacks in the nation, and you could say that he's done a good job developing young players.
Oh, yeah. I actually said earlier in the year in a random practice, I said, I think he's a star in the making. I think KU, the attention to detail that he has with his players and the fact that his players have really bought in, the fact that like Rasheem Green in particular was a guy who was not even in the starting rotation at the beginning of last year and just has become a star and living up to that five-star billing like he had in high school. And I think that a lot of that has to do with KU and also just Rasheem Green maturing himself. But you've seen several guys in the defensive line produce one, get an opportunity. Christian Rector's another guy who,
yep,
you know, kind of thrown in the mix and look how well he's done. I think KU is, you know, I don't know what his aspirations necessarily are in the coaching business, you know, if he wants to be a head coach or whatever, but I think he's going to be successful at every step. The way he just attacks everything, I think that he is a coach that is going to be really good. And I think for USC, the longer they can lock him up, the better.
Agreed. Is it a shame that there's kind of a correlation between your hype and how well you are with the media? Because Dylan McCullough is really good with the media, and he sounds really good if you videotape him. And he sounds like, okay, you're buying into this coach. KU is kind of more shy, and he's not very like media friendly as of now. And I think that kind of plays with his underratedness. If he had the same gusto as Dylan had, I think he would be more on people's radar.
I don't know. KU, when you talk to KU, he's great.
He is.
His quotes are great. You know, he's fun to talk to. He just doesn't like to do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And one of those things, he hasn't said it much this year, but last year he's like, I got to work with these young pups. I got to get these young pups ready. And, you know, he, like yesterday, someone grabbed him afterwards. And but he was sprinting off, and I had to try to say something to him real quick, and he's like, I gotta get to a meeting. He's always on the go, going to that next step. So I think that's part of it. I think he's just not, he's not ready to just walk over and like start having a long, he's not Chris Hawkins. He's not waiting for the media scrum.
Close up, yeah.
Yeah, because Chris Hawkins eventually will be a coach if he desires to. He's super smart with the X's and O's. If that's his desire after his playing days are over, he will be a coach. And I think he'll be the guy that walks up and will talk for,
yeah,
like Clay Helton was actually as offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Clay Helton will talk to you, you know, for 5-10 minutes if you desire. T. Martin does the same thing when he's in a good mood. That's not always, you know, after the loss to Washington State, he didn't want to talk very much at all.
Yeah.
A lot of one sentence answers. But you know, there's some coaches that dig that stuff, and other ones that want nothing to do with it, like Neil Callaway. So you know, so you gotta. Where you lie, I don't think it has to do with how you're rated as a coach, whether you're underrated or overrated, but I think it's just personality.
Do you got anything else? Okay, stock. Oh no, hurt stock. We're already done. Heard Jeez. It on the sidelines. Jock Peterson, kind of random, but although he was a USC baseball commit, which is your wheelhouse, but
I told you that on the sideline.
You did, yeah, you definitely did. So I heard it on the sideline. He looked pretty nervous getting ready for the curtain to like pull back, and there was extra time between like him walking up to the curtain because of senior day. So I could see his face, and he was kind of getting nervous. And then they finally pull back the curtains, and he was just dumbfounded. He was just like, "Oh my gosh!" And like I actually laughed at his reaction, and he looked at me and laughed and was like, "Oh my god!" So I was just like, "Oh, that's cool, a little moment with Jock Peterson." But yeah, no, I was gonna tweet it out because I got a good facial expression, but the internet's so crappy at the stadium. It's really annoying. I talked to Christian Rector this week. And I was asking him, like, you redshirted the first time USC went to the championship game. And he's like, yeah, I did. But I did get the Apple iWatch. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And he's like, yeah, but because, like, the players got an iWatch if you were, like, if you were a part of the team. And I was like, that's cool. An iWatch is cool. And he's like, yeah, it was pretty cool until I took it into the shower with me. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I thought it was waterproof. It's not. Just like. Okay.
You know, the first iteration of Apple products are not going to be the ones that are well designed the best to prevent them from tearing up.
Exactly. But he was like, they are waterproof now, so now I won't get in trouble. And I was like, yeah. But I'm like, how do you just end up taking an Apple Watch with you in the shower? I don't know. I'm not a watch person.
If you think something's waterproof, you just.
I guess so. But I feel like that would be weird. Okay. Anyway, I thought the bye week put an extra pep in people's step at practice.
Yeah.
Definitely just like the random things of like running in between like drills or portions of practice. People just were faster. Darnold was like sprinting really fast. I was like, okay, so maybe the healthiest we've seen him. He said he rested his arm during the whole bye week, which he said he felt crisper, sharper. So that maybe helps him.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell there's a little extra, you know, a little extra step, a little pep in the step for everyone just because, you know, they were fresh. That bye week did wonders for this group, which is why I'm so confused about this game, and I don't know.
Me too.
Because right after the UCLA game, or you know, even after Stanford wins, if USC were to play that next week, you know, knowing they're playing Stanford, I was like, they wouldn't win. Without the bye week, they would not win.
I don't know.
Because they were worn down. You know, Stanford's a team that grinds on you as well. That's the perfect recipe for USC, you know, just getting beat down and you know, Stanford just run the ball at the end of the game, you know, for the, like, probably like an 8-minute drive in the fourth quarter to dominate or to end the game. Now that they're fresh, now I don't know what to think. Because USC could come out and play lights out like they did early in the season, and that may be exactly what happens. So I don't know where to put this game at right now, but you can definitely tell the USC players are have much more energy and are bouncing a little bit more. So, you know, I talked to Cam Smith and he said exactly the same. He's like, it was basically like a refresher. It was a reset button. They're ready to go again. This is like season two now. Now you got you had season one was the regular season. Now it's season two postseason time.
Yeah. I could really go either way because I feel like under Clay Helton, USC hasn't really tinkered the a good way to rest and then come out with a lot of energy after a rest. But I'm not saying that they shouldn't rest because I definitely think they deserved it and needed it. I just don't know if they've mastered the whole bringing the energy from the beginning thing. You know? I don't know. Because, like, and, like, I don't even know because, like, they had a ton of energy at the beginning of the Wazoo game. And I was like, okay, they're in it. And then we saw how that game went. So I don't know. So I don't know.
Players in the game and not have everybody on your offensive line get hurt.
Injured, yeah, that tends to be a problem.
And this team's pretty healthy now. I mean, no poor yeah. Augustin is what we know, and Tyler Petit's still been limited. Tyler Petit only played 2 snaps against UCLA.
Yeah.
But you have Daniel Moribebe, who's more and more healthy each week. But I just think that week off, you know, the players got to get away from football a little bit.
Yeah.
They got to go home. They got to see their family, their friends, you know, do some things away from the football field, which is something they haven't done in like 3 months.
More than that.
Has it been that? Oh,
I feel like June. Because they started in July. Well, it's exhausting.
Four months.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it's been 13. This is the 13th week of the season, I think. So it's been that 13 weeks plus 4, 5, 6 weeks of training camp beforehand. So, you know, they definitely needed it. And I think they've come out and they look like a new team.
Are you going to go that far?
Yeah.
They look like a new team?
It's a different team. It looks different. It looks different than the team you saw the last 3 weeks.
In what way?
They're fresh. They're bouncing.
But that's not a new team.
It's new.
That's just a re-energized.
Well, it's new.
Semantics.
When's the last time they looked like this? Exactly. This is a new team. It's completely different.
Probably going into Stanford. The Twilight Zone.
Okay.
Don't even. The DBs have been practicing fades in the end zone, defending them.
Yeah, they need to, because that's what Stanford does.
And it didn't look too pretty.
Oh.
So.
Well, Stanford's going to do one of two things in the red zone. They're going to run the ball up the middle, in between the guards, or they're going to throw a fade. It's like they do nothing else. Watching the Notre Dame game, like, they did tosses. The quarterback would take the ball, it would be hacked to him, he would toss it back to the running back, and then run straight up the middle. Like, no tosses to the outside, no sweeps, no nothing. Just toss it, we'll run it up the middle. Or hand it off, we'll run up the middle. Or we throw 4 fades, and hopefully one of the guys catches it. Or it could be like the end of the Oregon State game. They throw like 92 fades. Some of them are called penalties, some of them are not. We're just going to keep running 92. It until we catch one of them. And that's what happened.
Do you feel like that's the most BA thing in football, when you're like, you know what we're going to do, stop it, and then you just can't? Like, I feel like that's, like, pretty... That's
I mean,
pretty...
that was the 2015 Pac-12 Championship. We're going to get Christian McCaffrey the ball. What are you going to do to stop it? And USC couldn't.
We're going
to
give...
They ran an angle route against Olajuwon Tucker, and unfortunately, he could not keep up with him. That's a very tough cover, and... See, that's the thing. I think USC's going to man up a lot. So it's going to be up to Jack Jones. It's going to be up to Isaiah Langley. It's going to be up to Iman Marshall to make some plays on the outside, because they're going to throw those big receivers. They're going to line up Colby Parkinson, the tight end from Oaks Christian. They're going to line him up outside. They're going to do that, especially in the red zone, but also earlier in the game. They're going to get Arcega Whiteside the ball. They're going to throw, you know, they throw some back shoulder stuff. They'll throw some, you know, 50-50 balls. That's what they're going to do. That's going to be their offense. And with KJ Costello, they've got a lot more confidence now, that team, especially on third downs, to make some plays and to throw the ball where their receivers can catch it, which wasn't always the case when I rewatched, you know, that Keller Chris, you know, some of the balls with low. And USC was able to tip a ton of balls that first game. Uchenna Nwosu in particular.
Yeah.
I haven't got a chance to kind of study KJ Costello and his release point where it is. That was one of the things they said after the Stanford game, is that against Keller Chris, we had studied the tape. We saw that he had a lower release point. We're going to make sure we get our hands up. And I think Uchenna had 4 in that game, maybe.
Yeah, that was the breakout game of like, oh, okay, PBUs are a thing now. Like,
from our defensive linemen, our outside linebackers, we're definitely going to get our hands up. And, you know, it happened a couple times in the UCLA game. Mm-hmm. Malik Dorton had one. Cam Smith had one. USC's done a really good job of that all season. And that's another thing that KU and Johnny Manson really have worked on with that group. And, you know, you see it paying off.
Do we want to get into Keep It Changing?
Wait, I got one more hurting on the side.
Oh, line. What? You told me you didn't.
I just was going to let you go. That's
lies.
The fake punt return.
Yeah.
I guess it's a fake punt return. I don't know.
I kept calling it fake punt return because I'm like, I don't know what else to call it.
I said they okie-doked him. You know, they basically put him on the row, or, you know, they took the punches. They Muhammad Ali'd it. You know, Ajinna Harris faked that he was returning the punt. The ball went completely the other way. Michael Pittman, it was so close to him being out of bounds, too. I asked him, I was like, you know, was that something you're worried about? He said, I looked down and saw that I was in, and he took off. And there were 2 guys on that side of the field. And I was behind the end zone just in case they came after it to try to get a punt return. I was trying to get a good pick of that, or a punt block, excuse me. And as soon as the ball went off his foot, I looked up, and at my peripheral, I'm following the ball with my eyes. At my peripheral, I see everyone's going a different direction. I'm like, uh-oh, this is a big play. This is a big play. And then I try to sprint over to the side where the returners are at so I can get pictures of him running towards the end zone. And there were several other photographers trying to do the same thing because everyone in the end zone saw what was happening.
Yeah, you could hear, right as that started to happen, you could hear all the shuffling of people's grabbing their cameras, getting in position, and the click, click, click. Because, like, from my point of view, I just follow the ball on punts. So it was just like, whoop, in the air, there's Michael Pittman, no one's around, touchdown. Like, it looked like nothing. It was just like, what is happening? But I did see out of the corner of my eye, Michael Pittman just slipped back, and I was like, okay. But, yeah. So I heard that UCLA's punter was yelling, "It went right! It went right!" And no one heard him.
You can see on the broadcast, he's like trying to wave people. You can see him. You can hear him a little bit on the broadcast when they showed a replay from the end zone. And he knew. He knew.
Uh-oh.
When he saw everybody, he's like, "No, no, no! Don't go that way! Don't go that way!" It's like a scary movie when you're in the theater. Don't go that door. That was basically the punter on that one. And he knew something horrific was coming. Touchdown.
And the Ajayi had to sell it because he was saying that you can't raise your hands above your head because then that's fair catch.
Yeah, if anyone calls a fair catch, the ball is dead upon dead. Catch. So,
but he sold it. He said he took acting classes at USC, so he used them. But he was saying that he was like, I kind of liked it when people were like in my face because I was like, the ball's over there. So it was funny seeing him all like proud.
His reaction is great because once he kind of pulls up from the fake catch attempt, he looks over and you just see a big smile on his face. And all the UCLA guys are like, what's going on? Why is he? What?
Whoops.
What?
Whoops.
Whoopsie.
Keep it, change it. Are you feeling that?
Nah.
Not feeling it either. So let's go into questions.
It's a new team. I know. So you can't really keep or change anything. It's a new team.
It's not the new team.
New team.
Clay Helton was asked this week if Stanford was the most complete victory that they had. 600 yards of total offense against a David Shaw team is pretty crazy. But he didn't flat out say yes. I feel like you would. Or would you not say that because you don't want to set yourself up for in case you lose, you didn't improve? Any of that?
I don't really know why. I mean, it was. It was our best win. I mean, the Arizona State won the game. They won pretty handily, too. So you could even say, yeah, it was one of our best, along with Arizona State. That's when we played our best. Now, how have they improved since then? That's the question mark. They haven't really lived up to potential, and part of that is they've not been quite as healthy since that game, starting with the offensive line getting nicked up a couple weeks later. The next week against Texas, losing Rasheem Green for a little bit. Rojo goes down for part of it. Steven Mitchell got nicked up in the game. So, yeah, you started getting more and more injuries coming out of that week. So that's part of it. Can they play? And also, I don't think he wanted to give any bulletin board material. Like, yeah, that's our best game. And, you know, that's something that Stanford, that's when they play their best. All right, we're going to beat them this time. We're going to show them our best this time. So yeah. Maybe that's part of it. It's just kind of a weird answer, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think this game will be a litmus test? It's kind of ironic that their most, I guess, complete game was week two, and now they're facing them again. Do you think it's a fair comparison to be like, okay, how have you gotten better if you can replicate it again against the team that you played week two?
I think people look at this Stanford team as being a different Stanford team than when they faced them the first time.
Yeah.
Similar to USC last year at the beginning of the season versus the end of the season because, take for example, Alabama. If USC were to play Alabama again at the end of last season, people thought it would be a much different game, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Because it was a different team with Sam Darnold at the helm. Stanford is a different team with KJ Costello. Like I said, they're playing with a lot more confidence, especially on third downs, that they can convert stuff. Whereas before, it was like, okay, we need to get 8 yards on first and second down so we have a third and short because we don't know if we're going to complete many third down passes under Keller Chris. So, you know, I think that if you beat them and you beat them handily, then I think that says a lot about this. If you struggle with them, if you get blown out, it says a lot as well. If it's a close game, that's just Stanford-USC rivalry.
You mentioned third down in Stanford. How weird is it that against Notre Dame, they were 2 of 11 for third down? 2 of 11, 18%. When's the last time that a team went 2 of 11 or 18% in third down conversions and won the game?
I don't have that stat pulled up, sorry.
Come on, Shotgun.
I'm not Stats Inc.
You are, a little bit.
That just tells you how well they were able to do on first and second down. I believe USC actually had a game earlier this year where they were not great on third downs, but were just super, super good on first and second downs. They didn't get many third downs. They put up a bunch of points in a game, but they just didn't have many third downs. I think that was what it is. I think this game is, you know, is not necessarily just the litmus test, but this determines whether it's going to be a, everybody's going to look at the season as a positive or a negative.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And you said it earlier on the Facebook Live is that, you know, this is a chance to, this could be a revisionist history game. You know, it's going to change how people look at those first 12 games a little bit. You know, if they just get by, then you're like, or if they lose, you're like, oh, you know, this is the same problem we saw all year. You know, we should have seen this coming, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think it, like you said earlier, that it's definitely a game that can alter how people look at the season.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, you basically repeated everything I said earlier. So I agree with myself. But
I'm pretty sure that you took it out of my mind at some point.
Yeah, I tend to read your mind, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think this has potential to change how people feel. I feel like if you win the Pac-12, you also win your bowl game. I just have that feeling for some reason. I know there's.
I don't know if that's true because
That's my gut feel. I'm not saying there's any like rhyme or reason for that. I'm just saying that's my gut feel.
USC's most likely in the Fiesta Bowl or the Alamo Bowl,
and that's a you just missed the playoff team that they're gonna play. So I don't actually know if that's
Alabama,
true.
Alabama, that could be Ohio State.
Alabama rematch.
That could be Georgia.
Georgia.
That could be, you know, a number of teams there. It could be even Auburn if Auburn loses that championship game. So you're going to face a very good team. And we said earlier there's just not a true dominant team this year. Like last year, you kind of knew that it was going to be Alabama and Clemson throughout the season.
Yeah.
You know, those two teams, Deshaun Watson was just leading, you know, Clemson on runs every game, it seemed like. This year, is there a dominant team? Like even Clemson's number one right now. I was like, I wouldn't have a ton of faith in them against any of those other teams in the top four.
Yeah.
There's no team I'm like, oh, yeah, they'll definitely be in the championship. None of those four teams are in the top four currently. Wisconsin's undefeated, and you're like, really? They're undefeated?
Yeah.
You're like, and of course, they haven't played anybody great. That's part of it. But, you know, all those teams up there, there's 8 to 10 teams that are, quote, unquote, playoff caliber for 2017. And of those 8 to 10 teams, maybe two of them would be in the conversation last year, and they wouldn't even necessarily be in those top two. They would definitely not be in the top two. I think the Alabama team last year and the Clemson team were much better than any team this year.
Which, if you're a USC fan, justifies your anger as to why USC can't win impressively, because I definitely think that they would be in the conversation if they did win impressively. And then got the... I don't know. I don't like wading into this because I go back and forth all the time about it. But I just think that for people who are upset why they're not in the conversation, because we get a lot of questions of like, why is Penn State, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they're not.
They're not. They Penn State shouldn't be ahead of them, for one. Yeah. Because that Penn State initially was ranked behind them, and Penn State's beat nobody since then. USC's beat nobody since then. There should be no change in those where those two are in favor of each other.
But it's feel. It's the feel.
Yeah, and
Penn State beats up against Maryland, and that looks good, quote
against
unquote.
Rutgers. They didn't play anybody at the end of the season.
Like,
they played two awful teams, and they won like they were supposed to. USC played two bad teams, and they won. They didn't win convincingly, I guess. But I don't think that, like I said earlier, I don't think the playoff committee is even watching the USC games. I think they're too late for them. I don't think they really care. They're like, these teams are outside the top 10. We don't really care to watch them. I'll save my Saturday college football viewing for the really good teams, and that's been the case with USC, especially when they're not playing anybody since that Notre Dame game that's worthwhile to watch till this week. They'll have all eyes on them. If they beat Stanford handily, they make a move up to, you know, the top six or somewhere in there, but that would take other teams losing, but there's no way they're getting the top four. They're not going to jump over Alabama for one.
Yeah,
you know, even if three of those top four teams lose, they're not jumping Alabama, so they're not going to get in over Alabama. There's no way they're going to get in the playoff right now. Even though there was the hypothesis, there was a coin flip, basically, whether they would get in if everything shook out. They're not going to get in over Alabama, and they're not going to get in over Ohio State, who just beat Wisconsin in this scenario. So, not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about the college football playoff, we actually got a voicemail.
Voicemail?
We're special. We're like Ryan Abraham and get the voicemails. It's kind of long, so the caller, if it's cut off a little bit, I'm sorry, but I cut you down if I did. So let's hear it.
Hey, Keeley Shotgun. This is Jeff from V Orange County. I want to give you my take on your guys' take on the college football playoff scenario and how you guys believe USC should or shouldn't be in there. Keeley, I absolutely disagree with your take on the college football playoff. USC should absolutely want to be in the college football playoff. Right now, as it stands, I mean, Clemson, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Auburn are all in the playoffs. You take any one of those teams out and put USC in, and we have more than a fighting chance in the college football playoff. Now, if we go the other route and go the way that a lot of people are asking for, how people are saying, hey, USC shouldn't be in the playoff, USC should want to go to the Fiesta Bowl and play another team. Well, here are the other teams that we might play in the Fiesta Bowl: Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Miami. Do we have any better of a shot against those four teams as we do the prior four teams? Absolutely not. Personally, I'd probably rather go up against the first four. And then there's even the worst case scenario. Let's say they throw us in the Fiesta Bowl and we have to play someone like, I don't know, 11-0 UCF or 10-1 Memphis. I mean, we'd probably be favored, but we always play down our competition. So we may lose those games too. So the fact of the matter is, I would rather go to the college football playoff. And, you know, worst case scenario, we lose that. The other scenarios is, you know, we just lose another bowl game to Alabama or Ohio State or something like that. So for all the fans who are stating, hey, I don't want to go to the college football playoffs, stop being quitters. I want to go to the college football playoff, and I want to win the national championship. Hey, you guys, take care. Bye.
Damn right. Well, stop being quitters.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Jeff, for calling in. I appreciate the civility. Because so I didn't realize how much people were going to get so upset over, because in my head it was just like you and I getting into a little bit about this little topic.
And you were wrong. That's why people got upset about it. You guys are abjectly wrong. You and Ryan Abraham both.
The thing, I will admit, my argument is from my, like, my position as a neutral person that's still involved with USC football, which is a very select few people. Otherwise, you're either going to be a fan or you're going to be a player. And obviously, if you're a fan or a player, you want to go to the highest thing. You want to go to the college football playoff. If you don't, you're a quitter, blah, 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 blah. Someone tweeted me, obviously, you've never been an athlete because that's a horrible mentality. So I'm not saying if you're a player, you're like, no, let's not shoot for the highest. I'm just, my argument is from my point of view, where I'm not a fan of USC, but I think it would be best for USC to go to a bowl game where they could win. But I understand Jeff's argument where they're probably going to go to a team where
part of this was that everybody expected, if they get in, they sneak in, they'd be fourth, they'd play Alabama.
Well,
and they're like, Alabama's so great and holy. No, Alabama's not that great this year either.
Yeah.
They're another one of those teams. They're, like I said, there are 8 to 10 teams that are all quote-unquote playoff caliber. There's no dominant team. Everybody thought that was Alabama, but Alabama hadn't played anybody this year. They beat up on FSU, or they didn't beat up. They played and beat FSU when they had their quarterback. But FSU turned out to be not very good without, you know,
Francois.
And then their biggest win was Mississippi State. I mean, Nick Saban is still, I think, has never beat a 9-win Auburn team. So, and that streak continued. Auburn beat up on them in that game. And they've had some injuries, too. I mean, that's part of it. But I think everyone kind of just like, oh, they can't play with this undefeated Alabama team. And now you look at the teams that they may play and who they would be playing in the playoff if they were to get there. And he makes a great point. That next four teams is just as dangerous as that top four teams. You look at them, you look at talent-wise, and you're like, yeah, we could play with Wisconsin for sure. Yeah. You look at Georgia's in that next spot, you're like, oh, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama's the next. Do I really want to play Wisconsin or Ohio State and Alabama? Like, you look at the talent on those top eight teams and you start looking at it like, we might as well be in the playoff because those top four teams might have less talent than the next four teams.
Yeah.
That's part of it. And now people are kind of realizing that. And my whole argument is you're trying to win a championship. So even if you're playing the 85 Bears, you want to go and have a chance in that playoff. Because if you don't get into the playoff, you don't have a chance at all. So you become a group of five team because UCF should be higher ranked than that. I mean, they're leading the nation in scoring. They're dominating people. They're undefeated. And they're, what, 13th? Come on, give him a chance, folks.
Give him a chance. No, yes, I agree. I agree.
That's right. You realize my argument was great.
I changed your mind
because you were incorrect, and now you realize it.
You
still want to be wrong?
I still believe that. I guess my whole point was this is not a championship team. So why put yourself...
Who is a championship team this year?
I'm talking in an isolated USC occurrence.
So...
I understand. I gave you your due. I agree.
I've said this before. USC, if they play to their potential, can they beat anybody in the country? This year, you would say yes.
That's a big if, though. And true. That's my point.
True, but...
I know. Any given Saturday, blah, blah. Yes, no, okay.
But there are 8 other teams that are saying the same thing. Because no one's really playing their potential all season. So there's no dominant team. So why would you not want to be in that running?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fine.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Thanks for the call.
No. Get out of here. On the whole, about this season.
This season.
I just think the reaction is just so interesting. And I feel like, okay, this is my question for you. Do you feel like USC season last year made fans biased to the trajectory of this year? And let me explain. Last year was 1-3, and so the expectations were, okay, well, this season's in the crapper, like, whatever. And then this new guy, Sam Darnold, comes around, and oh my gosh. And then you could tell USC was getting better each game, and everything was just, it was an upward trajectory. Even if the games weren't convincingly won, you could argue, even Penn State, that they were down. You know what I'm saying? So
that was a crazy game, in case you guys forgot.
Yeah. As opposed to this year, there's so much hype that it seems like a letdown. Versus if you had different expectations or you didn't have last year, you wouldn't feel that way.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. There were some games last year where teams were in the games. You know, the Cal game was kind of close, and they pulled away at the end. The Oregon game was kind of close in the fourth quarter. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, they pulled away at the end. And the UCLA game, I think it was tight at halftime, and then USC pulled away, if I remember correctly. Maybe forgetting that one. But there were some games where – and there was a lot of teams that weren't very good at the back end of that schedule. It looked really good because USC was – you know, it looked like they were continuing to play better. This season, it hasn't exactly gone that way. And I think I completely agree. I don't think you need to explain yourself. I think people are biased off of last year's results because they finished the season so strong, and people just, I guess, naturally thought, okay, that's going to continue. Even though we lost some key components that we had to replace, they're like, well, they'll be fine. We'll step in. Those offensive linemen will step in. They'll be fine. We'll replace Stevie Tuikolovatu like it's nothing. But that hasn't been the case. You know, there's been some holes that USC's had to fix. And because of the preseason ranking and the hype around Sam Darnold in particular, I think people just kind of expected it to be that way. And that hasn't been the case this season. And this team is still trying to grow. And I think that's the biggest thing is people know that there's more there. But we haven't necessarily seen it.
Yeah, I mean, because I feel like from a national perspective, it was like, oh, they have Rojo. Oh, they have Sam Darnold. Yeah, that Rose Bowl was such an emotional, great victory game. They must be great next season. But no one actually looked deep into it. And I also think it's multifaceted in the sense that maybe if the wide receivers had more time preseason, maybe getting that chemistry. I know I ring that bell every single podcast, but I still believe it's true. Even Helton mentioned it this yesterday. He asked, like, why are Darnold's numbers better in the second half? And he was like, more or less, because the wide receivers have come into their own, you know? So
you're like the Salvation Army at Walmart, just ringing the bell.
Ringing the wide receivers. But it's so true. It's so true. But, okay, whatever. Because here's the thing. This is an inexperienced team. I know, I keep hitting the mic because I'm very passionate. No, it's an inexperienced team. It's a young, quote-unquote, young team in that sense. And so expecting them to play like a team that's not,
wait, how young is this team?
Okay, ready? Let's get into it. Thanks for setting me up. Okay, so we're just going off of the starting lineup against UCLA. Okay, ready? Chuma Doga. Was he a starter?
Last year. Not really.
Chad Wheeler. He wasn't.
Not really.
This is the game of, were they starters last year?
Okay.
Andrew Voorhees, the freshman.
No. Who's a starter at Kingsburg?
I feel like high school's a little bit different.
Oh, okay.
Nico Fala.
Yes. After the first game.
Chris Brown.
New.
Tolo Badon at left tackle.
Definitely not left tackle, and he only played one game last year before Terrence ACL.
True. Deontay Burnett for a whole season.
No.
No. Part-time starter. It's not a full season of experience. That's what we're counting here.
Part-time starter.
Sam Darnold.
Part-time starter.
Ronald Jones.
Part-time starter.
Daniel Motobebe.
Part-time starter.
Tyler Vaughns.
Nope.
Michael Pittman.
Nope.
Okay. There's my point. Let's transition to defense, shall we?
Defense.
Josh Watu.
Part-time starter. No. He started one game. Started one game.
Jordan Iseffa.
No.
Currently at Predator.
Currently at a different position.
Cam Smith at Mike.
No, he was at Will last year. You're correct.
Jack Jones.
No.
Marvel Tell. Marvel?
Part-time starter.
Sort of, but Leon McWay. Rasheem Green.
Part-time starter. He kind of took over after the first game.
Sort of. Uchenna Nwosu?
Yes.
John Houston Jr.?
No.
Iman Marshall?
Yes.
Chris Hawkins?
Part-time starter.
Ajayne at nickel?
Part-time starter.
Part-time?
He took over like the fifth game after Jonathan Lockett blew his hip.
That was later in the season. Anyway, my point is, and I know that all teams go through that, but how many guys were full-time starters from that list? Nico?
One. No, Nico is not a full-time starter, but yeah, three.
Three?
Iman Marshall and Uchenna.
That's a big deal. Like, you can't underestimate that. And so you're going to see this team is inconsistent. They're inconsistent in every facet of how they play. And a mark of and being that young, that underdeveloped, or not having that many reps is going to make you inconsistent.
Ajayne took over in week eight, something like that.
Okay, see? Told you.
It is a cluster of things that is formed and swarmed together into a funnel cloud of tornadoes spewing things out. And one week, you know.
Magma.
The tornado's spinning, and one time it spits out the fence, one time it spits out the cow. You know, it's kind of like the issues USC has. One time it's the injuries, one time it's the coaching decision, it just kind of is a little bit of everything is combined into that funnel. And I think all those things have been issues at one time or another.
Yeah. I'm just saying I know no one likes to use it, but there's a nuance. There's to this in the sense that you can't expect guys who haven't had a lot of reps to play like they're...
That's college football, though. Guys are going to have to step up.
I know. And we've totally seen that. We've seen that with Toa. We've seen that with O-line. We've seen that with Jack Jones. We've seen it. I'm just saying you can't expect a whole both sides of the ball to all do that.
I see what you're saying. There was a lot of playing time last year for some of those guys that were part-time starters.
Yeah.
But yes.
Just saying.
That is not the ideal experience. How about that?
I'm not saying this is the whole reason to excuse the team because they're inexperienced. I'm just saying I feel like that has been an underlooked facet of this team. That's all I'm saying.
I get what you're saying.
Prediction, shall we? Do you have anything else to add?
I don't think so.
How difficult is to go up against a team that you've already faced? Especially if you're a guy like Clancy Pendergast who likes to keep his cards close to the vest.
You know, I think it's tough. It's obviously tough. It's even tougher to be the team three times. Talk about that in basketball. But to play a team football team twice is how much can you learn from the first time you played them? How much can you do the same? You know, there's going to be, you know, there's at halftime, it's, you know, sometimes it looks like a team is completely different in the first half and second half. There's a lot of adjustments that can happen at halftime. Now you've got 12 weeks to go off of, you know, 12 weeks of change. You got a different quarterback. It's kind of a whole new matchup. I don't think you can take a lot away from that first time and say, oh, especially when it's at the beginning of the season and now if you're like the Mountain West, when you got Fresno State and Boise State playing again after they played last week, which makes no sense, and somehow Boise State is the higher-ranked team, so they get home field, even though I think Fresno beat them last week, which makes no sense. So if that were the case, you can take a lot more from it. But it's kind of like these are, you know, your team at the beginning of the year, your team at the end of the year are kind of different teams. If you're USC and you got a bye week, you're a whole new team. Going back to that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I saw you roll your eyes. Going back to it. So, you know, it's like a whole new USC team. Do you use the stuff from the first game? I don't think you don't build your game plan off that at all. You just prepare like this is a new opponent.
But are you overthinking it at that point? Because no, USC has gotten in trouble with that.
No.
Getting too cute.
I think you look at their last month of thing. You look for any trick plays or stuff they ran in the first game or stuff they ran a bunch against you in the first game. All right, we need to cover that. But I think you look at the last month and see what kind of what they've done on tape the last month and go off that. Because, like I said, they got a new quarterback, so they're going to be running different stuff in that regard. You got Bryce Love, who's banged up, so they're not going to run probably the same type of stuff for him that they did in the first game when he was healthy. I think there's just some different weapons on both sides that you need to focus more on what they've done recently than in the past.
Yeah. As far as Nico Fala said that Harrison Phillips was the toughest defensive lineman he's gone against all season long. And he said that Stanford's just stacking the box more now. So there's different things, and I think that it's almost like you said, it's a new team a little bit. But, like, I just don't think – I feel like USC could have the chance if we get too cute, you know?
They could. That's always – I mean, they did that in what was the Colorado game with the stupid trick play inside the 10-yard line.
Someone really likes the trick play and it's forcing it. It feels so forced, and I want to know who that is. Who's doing that?
Well, trick plays can usually be either put in or vetoed by the top. So we haven't seen all their trick plays. I'm sure there's more of them they could pull out. But we have seen some that were very strange at the time when it seemed like the offense was really rolling to throw them in there. So it's got to be somewhere up to close to the top there. Someone near the top is making those decisions.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying someone near the top is making those decisions. I think if you're a individual player, if you're Jack Jones, then you look at what Arcega Whiteside did, what his steps were in the last game. But if you're looking at it as a coordinator, I think you don't really, focus in on that last game against Stanford. Now, maybe you look back at the last three times or four times your team has played Stanford and what is the trends. You pull the remember the Titans. I got the math teacher to go over his tape from the last 2 years, and this is what he runs on every third down or whatever. You don't remember that part of Remember the Titans?
That happened in Remember the Titans?
Yes.
When? Who?
Will Patton comes in and he says, hey, I got some stats for it. Or no, Denzel Washington brings it in to Will Patton. He's like, here's what they've run the last so long. And I got the math teachers to look over their game tape.
Wow.
Yeah.
I missed that part, I guess.
That was the analytic age.
Oh, Denzel, so innovative. That guy.
Oh, Herman Boone, yeah.
Prediction, shall we?
I told you, I don't know. I really don't know.
You know what I have to say about that? you should know. Actually, no, I don't know either. I just really wanted to use that sound effect.
I see how it is.
No, yeah, I really feel like it could be either way. I feel like it's hard to get 2 wins over Stanford in a season.
I tweeted this right after Stanford was officially in, that Stanford's going to want redemption for that week 2 loss.
Yeah.
They didn't play great. David Shaw, they didn't play great, but they didn't play bad. David Shaw said, we didn't play that bad. They just beat us. So they're going to want redemption for that game. They think they can play better. They got a new quarterback. They're going to have energy. I think Cam Smith said they're like a whole new team. It's just they've got a different culture. That's what he said. It's like a whole new culture there. So they're going to be wanting to prove that was a fluke at the beginning of the season. And also for them, they're on this a pretty good win streak. They want to prove that loss and the San Diego State loss were both, kind of flukes both at the beginning of the season. They want to be like USC last year. They're going to say, hey, look how strong we played down the stretch.
Yeah.
USC is going to want redemption, especially those older players for 2 years ago in the Pac-12 championship when it became the Christian McCaffrey show.
Yeah.
And that game was close to the first half, I believe. And there was something that happened at the end of the first half that USC wasn't able to score, and then I think Stanford got the ball to start the second half, and then they just never could catch up. They had no chance because they weren't stopping McCaffrey. So, I think USC's players, their older players that are in the lineup, are going to want redemption for that game. So how that matches up, again, there's a lot of factors that are going on this one that I can't really put my hand on of, this is going to be the thing that determines this game, because I feel like it's a different team for USC. They got more energy. The coaches had more time off, so maybe they come up with some trick plays or something we haven't seen. Maybe they, decide and they self-scouted and realize, hey, if we just keep running the ball against some of these teams, we could just run all over them for the whole game. And maybe they self-scouted and realize that they should just stick with some things when it's working, like we've said multiple times this year.
I think so. I think we have.
Yeah, the Family Feud says just run what's working.
Survey says. Ding, ding, ding.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, hold on. Survey says. That's not really whatever. I gotta get good sound effects. No, speaking of running the ball, do you think this is Ronald Jones' last game?
Yes. No. They got a bowl game.
You said that in the Facebook Live, that it was his last game.
I said last season. Not his last game.
I said his last game.
Did you?
Yep.
I misheard you.
That's why I was like, you were so like, yep. And I was like, really? Wow. And no one really questioned it. I was like, okay.
Misunderstood you then. No, I think it's last season. I think he'll play in the bowl game.
Yeah?
I don't think he'll sit out like some other guys.
I can't see it. Ronald Jones doesn't seem like that type of guy. I don't know.
It also depends who they're playing, what game it is. And if it's the Alamo Bowl, he's going to be home in Texas, so he'd have a ton of people there. So that would definitely be something that he would want to play in front of. So I don't know. It just depends.
Yeah. The whole beginning of the season seems like a lifetime ago. Like Ryan mentioned in the Facebook Live that Stanford went to Australia. Totally forgot about that. And then...
Yeah, that happened. And then UCLA basketball went to China. You didn't hear about that either, did you?
No, I didn't. Actually, I saw Arash Makrazi yesterday, and I was asking him all about that in the LeVar drama. But anyway, besides the point, I thought it was interesting how I totally also forgot that USC out-Stanforded Stanford in that game.
Because
Hilton said that the key was being efficient on first and second down. And that's something we haven't really necessarily seen from USC from that game.
Well, you know, like there's been times when they get third down and one, they can't get it.
Yeah.
And so they've been efficient on those in those cases. Yeah. So USC was really good running the ball on first and second down in that game. I mean, they were getting chunk yardage, similar to the beginning of the UCLA game. They were getting chunk yards on first and second down, and then, you know, they were able to convert on third down. And then after the first quarter against UCLA, they made some adjustments or whatever it was, and UCLA started stopping that, and the run game wasn't as efficient. I think the run game is the key. Because that Stanford front seven is not great. You know, their DBs at the beginning of the season were probably the best in the Pac-12. And, you know, they've had a couple injuries. I think Elijah Holder's still out for them. But Reed, you know, he got nicked up in one game, but he's back. He's a dynamic player at the safety position. I think the front seven, though, there's gaps there. I think USC can run against them again. But their offensive line has to play well. And the first game, like I said, I saw Chris Brown and Vione Talamavayo at times being 6-7 yards down the field making blocks on defensive linemen. So that means they pushed him back that far. They could do that. If they can do that again, I think USC can control the game.
Agreed. Give me your score, mister.
Well, I said 28-24.
But? Who's winning?
I said Stanford earlier. I might change my mind now.
What?
Yeah, that's how unsure of this game I am. I'm going to say 28-24 USC now.
Oh, wow. And you got so mad at me on the Facebook Live for trying to get the real answer out of you, and this is the real answer.
Yeah, because I don't know. I told you.
But your gut answer when I asked you at practice was Stanford.
No, my answer at practice was...
Oh, my gosh. You said Stanford.
No,
You said Stanford. You said USC comes out flat and Stanford wins. That's what you said. That's what you said.
Stanford Cardinal.
That was not my full answer. That was not my full answer.
No,
I said USC comes out flat, Stanford gets ahead, USC rallies, Stanford beats them in the end. And then I paused and I said, or this is a new, fresh USC team. They come out and they dominate in the trenches and they win. It's because I don't understand. I don't know.
You don't understand.
I don't understand this team. They're an enigma wrapped in a conundrum.
Sure, yeah. But that's not fair because then you're stealing my answer. I said either 28-21 USC or 28-24 USC. But then I'm also like, nah, I don't know how much I'm sold in that.
63-58.
Watch that be right.
That's not going to be right.
If you get that right, I will buy you a new car.
Okay. You heard it here, folks.
No, that's awesome.
There won't be enough possessions for that to happen. That's the thing. USC has to take care of the ball. Not turn the ball over. They had two turnovers against Stanford the first game. Still were it. But because the reason why they were able to win still is because they dominated each possession they had. When they didn't turn it over those two times, you know, they worked the ball down the field and they scored touchdowns. The first half, they had 5 possessions, 1 interception, 4 touchdowns. When you can do that, then you force Stanford to become a throwing team in the second half. And you saw, you know, guys like Porter Gustin and Uchenna Nwosu were able to get in the backfield and cause some havoc a little bit. And that's not what Stanford wants to do. They want to be ahead, work the clock, pound the ball on you with Scarlett and Bryce Love. If you make KJ Costello, if you make him be the guy, I don't know if he's quite ready for that. I don't know if he's the guy to lead them on a second half comeback. I think he's good. I think he's going to be pretty good there at Stanford. I think he's the best quarterback they've had since Andrew Luck. But he's not there yet. So yep, I think you've got to force him to be the guy. And I think USC will do that with their defensive schemes, at least early. You know, they're going to stack the box. They're going to try to do those things. They got to make sure they stay in their gaps. Don't give up the 75-yard run, you know, off the break to Bryce Love. But I think it's going to be up to those cornerbacks to make some plays.
I agree. I expect Bryce Love to have mild success, you know, one or two explosive plays. There's always that in the Clancy defense, there's those couple big plays. But I don't expect Bryce Love to have his day, especially because he's not 100%.
I think he's going to have 89 yards.
Very specific. I will hold you to it. I don't think USC loses this game unless they beat themselves. So no turnovers. Also, if you're ahead, actually do something in the third quarter with your offense.
No. Why would USC want to do offense in the third quarter?
I mean, I don't know.
USC as a whole just says, we don't do that. They don't do this third quarter offense.
They want to make it interesting. Have a little, like, make sure, test USC's fans' hearts.
What is
USC
this third quarter? Heart? You're supposed to score? I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it at all.
So if you are up at half, come out of the half and keep your pedal to the metal.
You know how many points they scored against Stanford in the third quarter of the first game?
I believe it was zero.
Zero.
Yeah, because for a long time, I feel like it was seven games. It was USC's defense didn't let a score happen in the third quarter, and USC didn't score in the third quarter. Yeah. It was
USC's
a 0-0.
USC's defense did not allow a point either in the third quarter, but.
That third quarter, man.
Who knew?
Who knew? All
we
right.
We all knew.
We've been talking for a while.
Game over.
Game over. Championship? Then what happens next?
Fiesta Bowl if they win, Alamo if they lose, according to Ryan Abraham, so we'll see.
We will see. I guess.
The one thing that we didn't really talk about in this game that was spectacular in that first game was Deontay Burnett. You remember the catches he made in that game? I mean, the diving
Stanford?
Touchdown catch before halftime against Stanford.
Yes.
And then also the tip ball he tips to himself and then turns to a 33-yard
game. The selfie catch?
Selfie catch, yeah.
Selfie catch.
So, you know, that's a guy that the Stanford's probably going to key on. If they key on him and they try to take him away, can somebody else step up on the outside?
Well, the interesting thing is Tyler Vaughns didn't really get his shot against Stanford. So, nope. Neither did Michael Pittman. So, it'll be interesting.
Pittman was still hurt at
the time. Yeah, I was supposed to say that. It'll be interesting to see how they do against Stanford.
I mean, neither one of those guys had a catch against Stanford. So, obviously, Pittman didn't.
I mean, is that an advantage when they haven't really gone up against those guys?
Again, now this is why I say you look at the last 4 weeks of a team playing versus looking at the first time you play them.
Yep, makes sense. Alrighty, we're talking too much. As extra bonus, listen to the beginning of this podcast before we started recording. Well, we were recording, but before we started doing our podcast.
Why are you bringing this up?
Because it's hilarious how apparently Shockin wears shorts underneath his pants. It makes no sense. So
do you want me to explain it? Or you
explain
just want me to
cut it. Explain it. Explain it.
Because in high school, I didn't go to lunch. I skipped lunch all the time. I just went to the gym to shoot. So underneath my jeans or pants that I wore the day, I just had basketball shorts, so I just quickly take off my pants, shoot for, you know, the 45 minutes, whatever the lunch is, and then go back to class.
Are you still shooting now?
I am always prepared for a pickup basketball game. Well, I got my sneaks on right now. If they see me driving by, like, hey, you want to go play some pickup? I'm in.
It's ball life? Ball is life? I guess so. Okay, we'll put it at the end of this podcast if I'm feeling charitable. He's rolling his eyes at me. Alrighty, we thank you for listening. Thank you for your emails and your calls. Your voicemails, we appreciate it.
Thanks.
We appreciate you listening. And we'll see you sometime soon.
Post Pac-12 championship.
Dun, dun, dun.
Peace.
Okay.
Shorts. Wear shorts underneath everything. Come on.
You're wearing shorts underneath your pants?
I always wear shorts underneath everything.
Like what type of shorts?
Basketball shorts.
So you're wearing basketball shorts right now?
Yes. You do?
Why?
You wear underwear and shorts?
Yeah.
That's
always ready for a basketball game. Oh. I'm always ready for pickup.
I don't understand this. I'm so glad I started recording when I did.
I started this in high school because I never went to lunch. I would always just go down to the gym and shoot.
You're one of those kids.
What? Unless there was chicken nuggets.
Yeah. I just can't understand why you'd wear basketball all the time. Like even when it was hot in like fall camp, were you wearing basketball shorts?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Unless I'm really fat and my pants don't fit me real well, then sometimes I have to take shorts off. Then I feel uncomfortable, though.
So now it's like a comfort thing?
Kind of. What?
You eat oranges like an apple and you wear shorts under your pants.
Never said I was normal.